And after you finish your radiation, after you finish your chemo infusions, you're kind of just set free. You know, they've done what they can for you. They can't do anything else except monitor you. And your treatments are kind of over. It really feels like you've been in the ocean with a life vest on, bobbing around, and someone comes by on a boat and they take your life vest, but they leave you and they just take off. That's kind of how it feels. At the moment, right now, no one knows how much ivermectin to take, and no one knows how often to take it. Because of Dr. Ruddy, I'm the first human to purposely take ivermectin for COVID, for cancer.
Doesn't dinner sound great as it's cooking? This dinner is from Riverbend Ranch, which always provides prime or high choice. Has never been given hormones, never been given antibiotics, never been given mRNA vaccines. It's raised in the USA. It's processed in the USA. In fact, it's fully vertically integrated, which means that they own the cow that gives birth to the calf. It's raised on their fields and then taken to their butcher and then shipped to you. And if we compare what we can buy from Riverbend Ranch to four other major steak companies that sell bundles that have ribeyes and other meat in it, it can be as much as $184 to $59 less expensive. It's a great price value, and it's a delicious piece of meat. Check out mycleanbeef.com/afterhours. That's mycleanbeef.com/afterhours. mycleanbeef.com/afterhours.
Welcome to After Hours with Dr. Sigaloff. On this podcast, you will be encouraged to question everything and to have the courage to stand for the truth. And now, to your host, Dr. Sigaloff.
Well, thank you for joining me again. I first want to give a shout out to all my Patreon supporters. We've got Too Tough giving $30 a month. We've got an anonymous family donating $20.20 a month. We have the Plandemic Reprimando giving $17.76 a month with Ty, Charles, Tinfoil, Stanley, Dr. Anna, Frank, Brian, Shell, Brantley, Gary, and Sharon. We have $10 a month with Kevin and Pat and Bev. We have the Refined Not Burned at $5 a month with Linda, Emmy, Joe, PJ, Rebecca, Marcus, Elizabeth, Dawn, Ken, Mary, and Amanda. We have Addison Mulder giving $3 a month and Frank giving $1.50. And then we have Courage is Contagious tier at $1 a month with Jay, Spesnasty, Darrell, Susan, Suzanne, BB King, and Caleb. Be sure and check out mycleanbeef.com/afterhours. That's mycleanbeef.com/afterhours to get some of the best beef that I've personally ever tasted. And we'll learn more about ways of eating when we talk to our next guest, Paul Mann. Sir, I met you at the FLCCC conference, and you were showcased as a patient who's gone through an incredible life change. And if anybody's interested in learning more about this, go back and listen to episode 123 that I did with Dr. Ruddy. But Paul, thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So tell me when all this started for you, what you were diagnosed with, what you understood that to mean, and then how you got hooked up with Dr. Ruddy.
In early, for the first couple months of 2022, I had some severe sciatica pains, and I thought it was just sciatica. I thought it would just go away. But eventually, the pain just became so overwhelming and just excruciating, I was forced to see a doctor. I saw a doctor that specializes in sciatica. He took an x-ray, and then he immediately said, I'm going to send you over to Metro Imaging. It's a chain of MRI facilities here in the St. Louis area. And he's like, I'm going to send you over there. They're going to do you, give you an MRI immediately, and then you come back. At the time, I didn't realize how unusual that was. They're usually booked up weeks and weeks, maybe months in advance. So just showing up and getting an MRI on the spot is kind of unheard of. But I didn't know that at the time, so it really didn't ring any alarms for me. Went back to his office, and I guess he had spoken to them on the phone already. And this was June 4th, or June 2nd of 22. And as soon as I showed back up in his office, he's like, you need to go to WashU emergency room right now. Take your disc and tell them, you know, what's going on, and give them this image disc. So I went to WashU the next day, June 3rd. They saw me pretty quick, actually, for emergency rooms. And they ended up keeping me about 2.5 weeks. I was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer. And from the very beginning, it was across my pelvis, up my spine, across most of the ribs, in the sternum, a little bit in the right arm, the right leg, and a few spots in my skull. They immediately started that day. One of the doctors told me, you are well beyond any kind of surgery. And the next day they started radiation treatments, they started hormone treatments, and then a week later they started chemo treatments. I had 6 chemo treatments total and 12 radiation treatments, 10 to my right pelvis and 2 to my sternum. And at the last chemotherapy session, infusion, Before the infusion, I was in the exam room and I was talking to the doctor. I knew a little bit about what was going to go on, but not quite. And I asked him, I was like, okay, we get the last chemo infusion, we wait 6 to 8 weeks, get another scan to see what's going on. If I still have cancer in me, do I get more chemo? What do we do? I thought chemo was the cure. And the doctor looked at me and he's like, this isn't curative. And I was just sitting there thinking to myself, well, if it isn't curative, why did we do this? I was thinking that, but I didn't say it. I was just kind of mind locked and numb. And either he's had enough experience with other people or he could read my expression, but he was like, you know, we're only doing this to improve the quality of life here at the end of your life. And I said something about I was thinking, because I'd get chemo on Thursday. By Friday afternoon, I'd start throwing up. And I'd throw up continuously until about Monday morning sometime. And when I say continuously, I mean continuously. You would think that you would run out of things to come out of you, but you do not. I wouldn't even have time to stand up before I'd have to throw up again. I just sat in front of the toilet, leaned over for 3.5 days straight. Couldn't sleep because you're throwing up continuously. And I was thinking to myself, this really isn't an improvement in the quality of life. I don't understand. And I said something about the future. And he's like, your only long-term goal is to make it to your next visit, which was a week away. And I asked him, am I living week to week? And he's like, no, you're squeaking by day to day. I'm trying to get you to week to week. And I was like, that was the first time I kind of realized that. And I was like, well, that's not good. And he goes, no, it's not a good position to be in at all. And he's like, at some point, one or more of your organs is going to have too much cancer in it to continue functioning. And you're going to have a series of organ failures. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound fun. And he's like, no, that's not fun at all. And he's like, but we have some medications where you won't feel most of that pain. And I was thinking the word most isn't the same as the word all. And I was like, well, that's not good. And he's like, it's really not. So that was the kind of end of that meeting. And I went on to have my last infusion right after that. And after you finish your radiation, after you finish your chemo infusions, you're kind of just set free. You know, they've done what they can for you. They can't do anything else except monitor you, and your treatments are kind of over. And it really feels like you've been in the ocean with a life vest on, bobbing around, and someone comes by on a boat and they take your life vest, but they leave you and they just take off. That's kind of how it feels. And I was very distraught, felt very abandoned. And I work for the federal government. I've worked for the federal government for about 28 years. And it's a tight-knit, there's a lot of people in this agency, but it's a tight-knit community. So word about me kind of spread around. And even people out in the East Coast, they're like, did you hear what happened to Paul? Have you heard what Paul's going through? And one of these people, I'd never met her before, but she sent me an email through work, and she's like, hey, I know someone who's an oncologist. I can see if she'll answer some questions if you have any to ask. And I did. I had several questions to ask. And I sent her an email back. Yes, I have lots of questions. And the person she's talking about is Dr. Reddy. And she told Dr. Reddy about me and gave Dr. Reddy my phone number. And sometime, this is probably November of 22, on a Sunday evening, Dr. Reddy called me and spoke to me for about 2.5-3 hours, just on her own time. And we've spoken once a week ever since. But, you know, she's like, okay, what were you diagnosed with? What have they treated? How have they treated you? You know, she got all that information first. And then she's like, if you have any questions, you know, and my first questions were like, why can't I get more chemo? Why can't I get more radiation? Why can't I get more, you know? And the answers to that is basically, at some point, because I asked, you know, some people get chemotherapy for like a year, to multiple years. Some people get like 40 or 50 radiation treatments. Why can't I? And when it comes to the chemotherapy, people who get chemotherapy for years are usually getting a reduced dosage spread out over a long period of time, versus that for me, they just went straight to the maximum right off the bat, which is good and bad. It's good that they treated it that aggressively. It's a bad sign that they thought they had to treat it that aggressively from the beginning. But the answer to why I couldn't have more chemotherapy is that at some point, your body just reaches a toxicity limit and you just can't have any more. Any more chemo would literally kill you. And that's just the way that is. The same with the radiation treatments. I had cancer or have cancer throughout my entire body. So they just can't radiate your entire body. So they pick and choose certain areas that are either life-threatening or causing extreme agonizing pain. And the pain is why they treated my right pelvis, and the life-threatening is why they treated my sternum. And those were the dosages to treat those two spots for those what they were doing. At first, you know, we talked a lot about this the first phone call. The next week, Dr. Reddy started suggesting things, you know, like a change of diet. I've changed my diet. She suggested a few like things to add or to try. And then maybe by December of 22, Dr. Reddy was like, it looks like in trials with animals, and it looks like maybe some people who were taking ivermectin for different reasons, that they might have had a good reaction with their cancer. And she's like, you have nothing to lose. You're at the end of the rope. You have nothing to lose. You should try to get some ivermectin and see what it does. if it doesn't do anything for you, whatever's going to happen is going to happen anyway, but it might just do something. She thought it would, and it appears that it did. It appears that so far it has extended my life, maybe a year past when they thought I was going to die. And I think things right now, things appear to be getting better. We'll find out for sure June 17 of 24, in about 2 months, I get my next round of full scans, and we'll know the exact what's going on at that moment.
So you had your last treatment, and then after that last treatment is when you got connected to Dr. Ruddy, and sometime after that is when you began the ivermectin. And yes. So, because I mean, people might say, oh, well, maybe it's working. Maybe the chemotherapy is working, but they stopped it because it wasn't working, correct?
They stopped it because it wasn't working. The doctor told me this was not curative. He told me that I was completely full of very advanced, very aggressive cancer. There is no curative. We are only doing this to improve your quality of life. So they had finished. I had reached my toxicity limit with that. It wasn't curative. It wasn't going to be curative. And they kind of set me free. And that's a month or so later is when I got in contact with Dr. Reddy.
Wow. What kind of dietary changes have you done to help your situation?
Okay, there's a very good book. I don't remember the author, but the name of the book is How Not to Die. It's a thicker book. The last half of the book is all citations and references. And the first half of the book is every type of cancer he talks about has its own specific little chapter. Each chapter is only 4 or 5 pages long. He covers many, many cancers. And he just kind of rounds up studies that different universities or hospitals have done regarding dietary changes and how it affects cancer. And the biggest one is sugar. If you have any kind of cancer, or if you know someone who has cancer, you got to cut down sugar as much as possible. I talked to someone doing an MRI one time. The reason why you cut, so when you're going to do an MRI for cancer, they run you through without contrast, and then they give you a contrast, and they run you through again and kind of spot things. And the contrast ends up getting absorbed by all the cancer, and you wait for an hour for it to do that, and then before they run that scan. That's a radioactive sugar solution that they give you. And the reason why they give you a sugar solution is they know that cancer cells eat sugar at something like 17 to 22 times the rate of a normal cell. Cancer cells love to eat sugar. That's a known fact. There's debate on what cancer cells are doing with that sugar. To me, it seems obvious it's doing that to power itself. But there's debate on what it's doing. But the fact is, they do know it eats sugar at that great of a rate more than a normal cell. And the book reads, and I just figured, if cancer is doing that, I don't want it to do that. So the biggest dietary change is I eat nothing with added sugar at all. I try to stick with things with zero sugar. Sometimes I'll go up to 2 grams, nothing more than 2 grams. So at the beginning, it's kind of hard because it takes a long time to go to the grocery store and you have to look at the labels of everything. You're like, okay, well, this one has 4 grams. Let me see if I can find one. You go, okay, well, this one has 2 grams. So I just drop my sugar for this item in half. And once you go to the store once or twice, you know which products to buy, and it makes it easy. But at the beginning, it's hard. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of time to figure out how to cut out sugar. But no chocolate, no candies, no. These are things you just got to stop.
Kind of another useful guide that you can use is if it's an animal product, if it's a, you know, beef, chicken, eggs, then it doesn't have sugar in it, and you can eat as much of that as you could possibly want.
Correct. So I eat a lot of meat and a lot of vegetables, and that's pretty much my diet, and I'm doing just fine. Some people have told me, you know, like, you have a really strong will not eating sugar, but I just look at things with sugar and go, do I really want to feed cancer, the cancer that's killing me? And my response is always, no, I don't want to feed the cancer that's killing me. So going without sugar is no problem with me so far. It's literally a life or death decision whether you want to eat, in my opinion, if you want to eat sugar or not.
Now that is the absolute truth, is cancer loves sugar, and you are faced with an amazing choice. Do I feed the cancer and my sweet tooth and my addiction to sugar, or do I not and have better quality of life and have a life that you wouldn't have otherwise? It's an incredible choice that you're faced with, and I'm glad you're picking the right thing.
So it was the no sugar. I added ground flaxseed. That's supposed to help reduce your testosterone, which helps reduce the PSA number, which for me, prostate cancer feeds off of testosterone as well. So that time when I went into the emergency room that first time, my PSA level was in the 800s. It's supposed to be like 5 or 6. 5 or 6 is kind of a high number, actually. It's supposed to be a little bit lower than that, but as you age, it creeps up. But mine was well into the 800s, to the point that the one doctor is like, we know it's prostate cancer. We really can't tell you that until the biopsies come back, but we know that's what it is, and we're treating you for prostate cancer right now. Even though the biopsies hadn't even been done yet, the PSA number was just so high and everything else was leading that they just already knew what it was.
Wow. So after treatment, do you remember what your PSA number was after your last chemotherapy treatment?
After my last chemotherapy, and they'd been giving me hormone shots to drive down the testosterone, which feeds the prostate. During that time period, they were able to drive my PSA down into like the 4 or 5 range. And currently, it's sitting at 0.02.
It's been at 0.02. When you say 4 or 5, you mean 4 or 500 or 4 or 5, the number itself?
4 or 5. It had gone from like 830 down to 4, 4.5, something like that. And it's currently at 0.02.
Wow.
And the doctor said their goal was to get it under 0.2, and I'm at 0.02.
Wow.
So through my diet and through their hormones and all that, I've really done a good job at almost getting to zero.
And at what point did you start the ivermectin? At what point was the PSA when you started it and after?
When I started the ivermectin, my PSA was probably a 5 or 6. And started the ivermectin. For me, it's almost impossible to get ivermectin here in Missouri. It's really hard to find a doctor that'll even talk about ivermectin, let alone prescribe. And it's really hard to find a pharmacy that would get it, you know. If you took it to Walmart, they definitely won't hand it out. If you take it to a Walgreens or CVS, they're not going to. You have to go to like a compounding pharmacy. It's probably easier in Missouri to buy heroin than it is ivermectin.
Wow.
But that's the truth. And you probably get more trouble for buying ivermectin than you do heroin. That's probably the truth as well. But in Tennessee, which is about 4.5 hour drive one way for me, you can get it. It's this weird kind of over-the-counter. You don't need a doctor's prescription, but the pharmacist can prescribe it. And it was a compounding pharmacy about 4.5 hours away. They sell it as a prophylactic for COVID. So they sell it based on your weight, and they sell it in enough quantity that you can take like 2 pills a week for 90 days. as a prophylactic against COVID. I needed a whole lot more than that. And so I had a friend who also would get ivermectin, and then I would just pay for both prescriptions. And that would give me four pills for 90 days, but I was still kind of breaking him up to make him stretch for
the entire, What dosage were those, the 3 milligram tablets?
They were capsules.
Okay.
So I'm not quite sure. They're based on, I just gave him a weight of 170. But now I was at that FLCCC conference there in Phoenix, Arizona. And a lot of people kept telling me about buying it through IndiaMart. So I just received a huge order. I'd ordered like 1,000 12 milligram pills, and I received them. So my plan is to take two of those a day. That'll be 24 milligrams. So I'll take 24 milligrams a day, and that shipment should last me 500 days. So for the next year and a half or so, I'm set for ivermectin. Because it was costing me, you know, $100 a prescription for 90 days in Tennessee, and I got the 1,000 pills for about $120, $130 through IndiaMart. And at the time, I was talking to Dr. Merrick. I was like, I was kind of worried about if they're legit pills through India or not. And he's like, ivermectin is so cheap. It would be more expensive to sell you fake pills than real pills. They're just fine. So that's my plan now. And that's part of the study. At the moment, right now, no one knows how much ivermectin to take. And no one knows how often to take it. It's just kind of because of Dr. Reddy, I'm the first human to purposely take ivermectin for cancer. And she was suggesting about 20 milligrams or so. The way I was divine pills, I know I was under that. I just don't know how much under that. But now, since I have these 12 milligram pills, I can more, you know, confidently take the same amount every single day in a known quantity. So that's part of Dr. Merrick's. He just got approved for his studies, and that'll be part of his studies, is how much and how often.
Yeah, that's something we really need to know. You know, would 12 milligrams be just as good as 30, or is there a sweet spot where you go more and it's less effective? That's something that hopefully Dr. Merrick can figure out.
No one knows. Right. No one knows yet. Hopefully people have the same results I've seemed to have with ivermectin. Like at the FLCCC conference, you know, Dr. Ruddy had said, you know, she said, let me make it clear. When I first came in contact with Paul, he was circling the drain. And now he's not. So that was her quote.
Yeah. I remember that. It just shocked me to the core. And then to see you standing there.
And now, despite everything, you know, last I know, based on my last scans, which were about 9 months ago, you know, I still have cancer in quite a few places. But I'm doing much better. Everyone I know tells me I'm looking better. At the time I started taking ivermectin, I was gray. I might look gray in the light now, but in person I look a little more pinkish. But I looked gray, like concrete color, and I lost a lot of weight. At one time I was in hospice. They thought I was going to die. I thought I was going to die. They had a minister come in to talk to me about dying and you know, if I was ready to meet my maker. And I just kept waking up, and I kind of got better, and they kind of released me from hospice. And I remember I told the nurse one time that maybe I was too dumb to die. You know, I was like, maybe I don't know how to die. I just keep waking up every day, and here I am. And she's like, oh, no, you're a good fighter. You're doing real good. And I was like, I don't really think I'm a fighter. I'm just taking a ride like I'm on a roller coaster. But I don't know. Here I am. And despite everything, with all the changes to diet, with the ivermectin, with all the other things, I'm living the best life I've lived in years. So.
Hey, what does the personal side of it look like to you, if you're willing to get into some of that? Like, how has it changed your daily routine? How is it, you know, do you appreciate things differently?
I do appreciate things quite a bit more. I don't let little things get to me, and I don't let most of the big things get to me too. You know, I hear people complain about this or that or whatever, and you're like, that's really not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, whatever you're complaining about, you know, I was basically on death's door to the point where they brought a minister in to talk to me about meeting God. So if someone's driving a little slower in front of me in the highway, that's not a big deal. Or if I spill something, that's really not a big deal. It just, I'm kind of like a cat now. Nothing seems to bother me, I guess.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, you just got to appreciate life a little bit more. Don't let things get to you. You know, it ain't nothing but a thing. It'll pass. Whatever your problem is, it'll pass. There are people with a whole lot worse problems. No matter how bad your problem is, there are people with even worse problems that are cheerfully living through their day. And, you know, just use them as an example and just try to have a cheerful heart.
Are spiritual things important to you?
They are now. You know, I grew up, went to church, but then life, you know, I had got married and had kids and kind of fell out of it and for quite a while. And then maybe in about December of 22, I just one morning I was just like, I need to start going back to church. And within a week, I have this long-term friend. We got hired at the agency at the same time, but then he went his own way. And we would cross paths every 10, 15 years or whatever. And we would just pick up like we saw each other yesterday. And within a few days of me deciding, you know, I want to go back to church, this guy I knew for long, Rob, he just kind of connected in my life again, just kind of happenstance. And he's like, hey, I go to this church real close to you. Do you want to go? And I was like, I do. So, you know, it just kind of fell in my lap. It's been a great family for me and a great support group. And, you know, I enjoy going. I really like going.
That's wonderful. Is there anything else that you want to leave us with?
You know, just don't give up. I had a tattoo put on my arm that said, I won't give up. I won't give in. And, you know, some days are really hard. Some days are hard, but, you know, a little bit easier. I still, doing things is still rather painful, but I get up and do them. At work, they gave me the option, like, we can find something for you to do from home if you'd rather work from home. I was like, no, I think working from home would be the end of me. Going to work gives me a reason to get up, gives me a reason to take a shower in the morning. You know, I go to work, I take part in meetings, I contribute, I interact with people in the office. And I think to the best of your ability, keep doing what you were doing. It might be more painful. It might take you longer to do those things, but don't let cancer take things away from you. Just keep doing what you were doing, how you were doing it, and just keep living your life. And don't give up and don't give in. Just keep plugging along the best you can. And have a good, I think that helps with your attitude. Interacting with people helps. And I think overall, you know, continuing to live your life pretty much as close to the way you were before, I think has a lot to do with your health. I think your attitude and your spirit have a lot to do with it.
Absolutely. 100%.
You know, if you think you're going to die and you think this is the end, you're probably going to figure out somehow to make that happen. And if you think, nope, you know, I've got plans for next week, I'm going to do those. I got plans next month, I'm going to do those. You just seem to, you know, stick around and make those plans happen.
This is such an uplifting story to hear you talk.
My best piece of advice is just don't give up.
Yeah.
Just keep plugging forward and don't give up.
It's so uplifting to hear you talk about this and how you're going through the thick of it and you still are looking up. I think that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that when I saw you at the FLCCC conference, I would never have believed that you had hospice called, that you had, had stage 4 cancer, because you don't look like it. You can usually, as you mentioned, you look great before, but you didn't look great when I saw you. And you can usually tell when people have that kind of medical illness going on.
Before I started the ivermectin, before I started some of my friends recently have told me, you looked terrible. At one time, we were really worried, you know, that you weren't going to last much longer. And now you look great. Yeah, most people would not know or guess when they look at me now. So,
well, Paul,
it's all the attitude, the ivermectin, the change of diet. It's all, I kind of think, It all works together. You take traditional medicine, you do your alternative medicines, you do your dietary changes. You got to work at it just as much as the doctors work at it. And I think it all works together as one. So just try everything.
Absolutely. I agree. It's not just, it's not the diseased organ. It's the patient there too. It's the body, right. It's the mind, it's the spirit. And
right. And
all of that has to be fed and taken care of.
Right. It does. And I still think attitude is a huge part of it.
Absolutely.
And it's sad and it's depressing. And I had moments, you know, I was very distraught when, you know, my traditional treatments ended. I was very distraught at different times, but, you know, I kind of took my time, got the air under my wings again, and, you know, so it's not all roses. You'll have up days, and you'll have really bad down days, but over the span of time, things will work out.
Paul, thank you so much for sharing your story, for letting me be able to immortalize this on video, and I'll definitely let you know when this gets published, and perhaps when you get those scans, if things are looking good, or if they're not, and you're willing to share, I'd love to have you back and to talk about it.
Sure. Another thing I want to say, tell people that's very helpful. At the beginning, I only told a few people at work that would see me because I would show up with no hair over, you know, they would know, you know, they go, where the hell's Paul all this time? He's never here. So I had to tell them what was going on and why, but I didn't tell any of my friends, didn't tell anyone. And I was in the hospice. Everyone thought I was going. And then when I survived hospice, I got home. This was late December of 22. And I decided I was going to create this. I thought it was going to be just for me and kept secret. I was going to create this photo album on Facebook to where only I could see it. I wanted it posted somehow after I die because I didn't want to die and people to not know what I had gone through. So it was like a whole lot of photos taken of me. throughout the year in the hospital and hospice, getting infusions, having my hair shaved, all sorts of things like that. But I created this photo album, thought it was just for me only, saved it and went to bed, and got up the next day and found out I had kind of posted it for everyone to see. Yeah. So I didn't get on Facebook for like another 3 days. I was just mortified. But after that, the love and support from all the friends and all the people who knew me and stuff was just overwhelming. And since that point, I just shared everything. Every time I went for scans, every time I got scan results, every time I went for something like a spinal block or a treatment, I would post it, you know, and I tell people. There's a big shame of cancer patients for getting cancer. I don't know why that is, but it kind of seems to run the gamut that people with cancer or have shame about it. And just let people know, and you'll be surprised on how much love and support you'll actually get from everybody. And I think that accidental sharing of all those photos was probably the best thing that happened to me in this whole thing. You know, I was mortified when it happened. I could have like jumped off a cliff or something, but actually, in the long run, that was letting people know, even if it was by accident, was the best thing that happened, and it's the best thing that could have happened. So share with your friends, share with your family, and you will be surprised at how much support you get from everybody.
What a wonderful mistake that you made there.
Yeah. And it's kind of educational for other people because all people really know is that, okay, you have cancer, you get chemo, and chemo makes you throw up. But they don't really know what it's like to be laying on the radiation table when everyone leaves and they shut like a 4-foot thick lead door and you're stuck in there by yourself. Or they don't know what it's like. Some might, you know, to be like, to wake up at 3 a.m, you've been in the hospital 2.5 weeks and it's just so cold that you can't go back to sleep and you're just, you know, you might get a visitor for an hour a day or something like that and how lonely it is to be in there. And, you know, people just don't understand or know a lot of these things. So, you know, I just tell them, okay, this is how this treatment goes. This is what they do. Some of it's kind of gross, but this is what happens, you know, and I think it also gives people a better understanding of what cancer patients go through.
How can people find you if they're looking for you, if they want to give you encouragement?
I'm just on Facebook, Paul Mann. I'm wearing a white shirt with a red tie, so in my profile picture, but I mean, I don't think there's that many Paul Manns on there. I don't know.
Paul, I want to thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and taking the time.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I'm going to be praying for you, and I hope my audience will be as well.
I'm sure they will. And I want to thank everyone for their prayers and support as well.
Okay. God bless. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Just a reminder for everyone out there, duty uniform of the day, the full armor of God. Let's all make courage more contagious than fear.
Doesn't dinner sound great as it's cooking? This dinner is from Riverbend Ranch, which always provides prime or high choice. Has never been given hormones, never been given antibiotics, never been given mRNA vaccines. It's raised in the USA. It's processed in the USA. In fact, it's fully vertically integrated, which means that they own the cow that gives birth to the calf. It's raised on their fields and then taken to their butcher and then shipped to you. And if we compare what we can buy from Riverbend Ranch to four other major steak companies that sell
bundles that have ribeyes and other meat in it, it can be as much as $184 to $59 less expensive. It's a great price value, and it's a delicious piece of meat. Check out mycleanbeef.com/afterhours. That's mycleanbeef.com/afterhours. mycleanbeef.com/afterhours.